Oh, that's right. Good afternoon, everybody. Hey, I'm Ann Eller, right here with the Vintager. And today is October 5th. We're talking pearls, opals, and cameos. Not necessarily in that order. We're also going to do a live after show on Facebook, so make sure you check that out. But right now, how you doing this afternoon, Jeff?
Just waiting to be able to do this. I have the excitement built all day.
Isn't he a joy? He is so much fun. Yes, he is. Well, The Vintager has become quite a popular series here, and today we're continuing it as we talk about opals, pearls, and cameos. And of course, October is opals for the birthstone. So we thought, what better stone to talk about? There's a lot of lore. There's a lot of interesting facts. You may not know that much about them, but you're going to learn about it from the Vintager. So what are you going to tell us today, Jeff?
Well, first I want to just have a quick call out to Charlene, Mary, and LaGuardia on the cut glass that they've been able to acquire and bring in, and the fact that they were so excited over it.
Wow, that's great. That's
yeah,
great.
Yeah, it was kind of surprising.
Yeah.
All right, now on the opals, the fact of the opals is that opal is almost found on every continent.
Really?
Really.
We have them in North America?
Yes. We call it fossilized wood or petrified wood.
Darn, we should have gotten a piece of petrified wood and brought it in here for
we
today.
Have it.
We do. We should get that for them. Okay.
The opalization of wood creates petrified wood. The opalization of bones creates fossil bones.
We've had some petrified dinosaur bones, haven't we?
We have petrified dinosaur bone or opalized dinosaur bone.
How about that?
Yeah. Out in the Virgin Valley of Idaho, they have regular natural opal that's as beautiful as there's any in the world. The problem is that it's not stable.
What does that mean?
It means that opal actually has a moisture retention within the stone.
Mm-hmm.
And if they dry out, they become checkered or cracked.
Oh, well, is that where if you put baby oil on it, it'll preserve it, comes from?
Won't do a thing for it.
Wow, another myth buster busted here today.
All right, most of the opals, a big portion of the world's opals come from two counties in Australia.
Okay.
New South Wales.
Yes.
And of course, around the Lightning Ridge area of Australia. And that you have Andamocha, Lightning Ridge Black Opals, you have the White Opals, you have the Super Dark Opals. I mean, those are the value opals of the world are right there in Australia.
Hmm.
It's easy to mine them, and it's a small craft industry in Australia.
Now, I might ask you, this is just what we have here on the table, a small selection of what we have in opals. I might ask, how did we acquire so many opals, particularly since they're all unset, Jeff?
Well, at one time, we used to supply the jewelry industry with probably about 10% of the opals they ever used. A fellow named Richard Osmond, which was very, very prolific in supplying opals, probably supplied another 10 or 20%, and then the rest of the market was fragmented. But we supplied opals to all the stone dealers on the eastern part of the United States for sure.
Absolutely. And of note, Richard was a good friend, and he died several years ago.
He died of something called MRSA.
Yeah, unbelievable, huh? To know somebody. So what are we talking about here today? I mean, where the opal comes from, how it comes, why we have different colors.
I thought I would show a few pieces of opal within the matrix of the rock that they're found in. And there's basic types of opal produce basic types of color.
Okay.
For instance, there are a lot of opals that are opalized crustacean or opalized mollusk. Opalized clam shells.
They're dead fish?
Dead, well, dead shellfish.
Yes, okay.
And what happens is that
Is it phosphorus?
Yes.
Okay. Phosphorus in the shell.
Right. It becomes a plastic, and I use the term plastic, a very liberalized term. Glass is actually a plastic. In other words, it flowed before it hardened.
Okay.
And these objects, the colorization comes from the chemical composition of the animal.
Wow.
Yeah.
Can you actually tell by the different colors what the animal was that gave up its life for this?
Pretty much. I mean, for instance, almost all the small clams that produce the brightest colors.
Okay.
And we're talking, this is a picture of one of the ones that we have here. I mean, you can actually see the clam shape.
Yeah, that one does. And that has beautiful blues and greens and yellows and golds. It has all different colors in it.
It has every color except white. And if it has every color except white, or it doesn't have white, period.
Okay.
It is termed a black opal.
Wow. So there you go. That's how they get the definition of black. It's not necessarily a black stone.
I don't think I've ever seen one that was black. I've seen very dark blue, mm-hmm. but it was obviously blue, but no black. The terminology came about a couple of hundred years ago and has stuck with it.
Wow. Now, you know, you've got some in the water there on the table. And, of course, why do we keep it in the water and what is it exactly does all that mean?
Well, I keep it in the water, number one, to keep it from drying out, but mostly so I can see the veins and the color within the matrix rock that I have it in and make my decisions on whether to cut it or not.
Back in the day when you were cutting.
Yes, at one time we were cutting 300, 400 pieces a week.
Yeah. Not now.
Not now.
Not now. So in case anybody's sitting out there and says, oh, my God, I found a place I can bring your stones to have them cut. Not anymore, folks. Yeah.
No, that was in a day when there was no gaming, there was no internet, there was no Android or anything like that. It was...
It was a great hobby.
It was a great hobby, and it was a great vocation for the kids that we hired.
To do it.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay, so opal comes from shells, basically, that have been fossilized.
Right.
Okay. And we have all kinds of opals out here on the table. In fact, I think we're going to post on Facebook, if you would like to register to win the free opal that Emerald will take a picture from, after the show we'll be talking a little more about it, you'll be able to actually win a free opal. How about that? What a great idea, Jeff.
What a great idea. And the fact is that opal, until the last 100 and some years, was the highest valued gemstone there was.
I didn't know that.
They got opals in the Roman Empire from Hungary.
Really?
Yeah. Most of the mine area that they found opal in has been pretty well played out, but they still find a piece now and then. And Caesar actually gave up a division of soldiers to trade in for an opal.
How about that? Now, this is kind of stuff you never hear anywhere, not on any show, but you do right here on The Vintager, right here on WCRS. Now, what kind of price on opal? And, you know, opal, when people are looking at opals, how do they know what to look for?
Opal basically runs from a couple of dollars a carat
mm-hmm.
all the way up to $40,000, $50,000 per carat.
Wow.
And some of them have gone for over $100,000 per carat.
Wow.
It's the contrast and the intensity of color.
Do we have a $100,000 a carat opal sitting here, Jeff?
Not a one. But we have some $1,000 a carat opal.
Yeah.
And we have a few pieces that would hit the $2,000 mark. So wow. We have some opal of value. And we have some totally unique opals that, because of the uniqueness, have their value. We have black boulder opal that still has the original ironstone on it. Mm-hmm. But the thing that makes that unique is the size of the piece.
It's huge.
That's one we cut back in the late 80s, early 90s.
And it has the brown. Now, what is that rock?
It's ironstone.
Ironstone. And it forms ironstone and opal form together?
Usually the ironstone has started forming before the opalization of the clams or whatever's in the area.
Now, and the problem is you can't separate it. That's why it's cut right with it and polished so that it shows off the color zones and everything.
Well, to get the opal out of that, it had very small, thin pieces, and I thought that it looked a whole lot better just to leave it the way it is.
Yeah. It's beautiful. And that's actually a piece that we made here at Sharp Facets Gallery.
We cut the stone, made the mounting. I mean, it was made totally by our little hands.
That's right. And that, of course, is a nice big pendant here. So that's a wonderful piece of opal right there. If you're with us on Facebook, WCRS.AM Radio, she will be posting that on our Facebook page so you can see that. Do you want to do one more opal before we hear a word from our sponsors?
Well, this piece of rough opal actually has all the ingredients of high dollar opal in it. It has a very dark blue, it has a striation of color, and it has the brilliance.
It does. And we used to actually get barrels of the opal like that.
Those days are long since gone.
Those were the days, my friend. We thought they'd never end. Yeah,
we did.
Okay. That's right. We did.
I mean, now in Australia, what has happened, first they used to send it to Hong Kong to get it cut.
Right.
Now, so many Chinese have immigrated to Australia. The cutting's right there in Australia now.
We have Little China.
They have Little China.
China right there in Australia. Okay.
There's not a major Australian city that doesn't have a Chinatown.
How about that?
Yeah. And all of that's within the last 40 years.
Wow.
It's when I went first to Australia in the 60s, there wasn't anything you saw except Aborigines and white people.
Wow.
And no Asiatics, hardly. I mean, nowhere.
Wow. And now they have cutting operations, jewelry operations, all of that right there
all
in Australia.
Yeah, Southeast Asians, they went to where the market was, market for their skills.
Now, we have that one big piece that we showed you, and we wanted to show you another piece that we just made up that is a gorgeous opal. This is an awesome piece right here. I tell you what, you can see all, it looks like a... like a mosaic almost, doesn't it?
It is. It's actually what they call a sunset.
Oh, that would be good. That's a good term to describe it. It's got the blues and the golds and the reds.
And to have all those colors with the absence of any white automatically defines it as...
a black opal.
That's correct.
Wow. Well, this is another piece that we've made up, but we want people to know that if you would like to make up something, do something in opal, this week we're going to have all the opals out in the store, so you'll be able to come in if you want to pick out an opal, pick out a setting. You've got enough time if you want to do something for Christmas or for somebody's birthday. We can do it right here at Sharp Facets Gallery. So why don't you come by and see us? Not this afternoon, because we're closed this afternoon, as we always are on Wednesday afternoons, but this is another part of the Vintager. Right now, let's hear a quick word from our sponsors. Anything else you'd like to say about opals before we move on, Jeff?
Yes. The one thing that you won't have on the finer opal is be able to match two pieces identically.
No, unless you get splits, right? That split apart, or you specifically cut two pieces, like for earrings, out of the same material.
Even then, there's oftentimes a little bit of difference.
So you show one side of your head and then the other side of your head,
well,
right?
What you have that makes opal so special is it's so individualized to begin with.
Absolutely.
Each person has their own type, own color, and own intensity.
About opals. Now, just out of curiosity, lots of people love opals. They think they're beautiful, but they go, oh, it's not my birthstone. I can't have one. Where did that folklore come from?
Remember the book Ivanhoe from when you were in middle school or early high school?
Yeah, sort of.
Well, in there was somebody that got the opal as their birthstone, and it wasn't their birthstone, and they had terrible luck and terrible consequences.
So does that mean this is true?
It means it was a myth created by that popular novel.
Okay. So it's not really true. Opals are for everybody if you'd like to have one and own one and possess one.
Well, they asked Queen Victoria if she was afraid of having an opal. She said the only bad luck on bad opals is if you don't have one.
Ah, I like Queen Victoria. That's right. So why don't you keep it right here on WCRS? We're going to take a quick break. You stay with us. We'll be right back. When we come back, we're going to be talking about... which one, cameos or pearls?
Pearls.
Pearls. So don't you go away. We'll be right back.
Gold. Gold. More precious than any other time in history. Do you have gold? Do you need cash? Then bring it to SFG. That's Sharp Facets Gallery, 1220 Bypass 72, Greenwood. Telephone 229-6613. Don't forget, we buy diamonds too. Paying the highest prices for your gold and diamonds at Sharp Facets Gallery.
Oh, that's right. We're right back here, Sharp Facets Gallery. And we're closed this afternoon. We're having a great time. We've got Jeff the Vintager. And Colleen said that you rock, Jeff.
Well, it's a good memory anyhow.
It's a good memory. Okay, thanks, Colleen. He needed that this afternoon. That's right. We love for your interactions right there on Facebook with us, WCRS.AM Radio. If you've got a comment or want to say something in between Emerald filming this and posting pictures and videos, she will check the comments. But we wanted to talk some about pearls now, right, Jeff?
We're going to go over pearls, and again, pearls are found in almost any saltwater location,
mm-hmm.
Naturally.
Okay.
But not of commercial quality nor of commercial quantity.
Okay.
The first pearls on national levels came out of the Red Sea.
Okay.
And those were the pearls that the Romans coveted.
And men wore pearls back then, didn't they?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. I mean, that was huge.
I mean, even up into the 20s and 30s and 50s, if you went to India and you met a Maharaja, and they still had Maharajas, they still have them.
Right.
But if you met one and you was at a formal thing, the person with all the draping of pearls was the guy. Not his wife.
Okay, that's interesting.
Yeah, well, because pearls were so precious.
You know, we don't think about pearls as being that precious today, though. I mean, the general people. I mean, we don't think that they're that precious. I think a lot of people think, oh, pearls, that's my grandmother's jewelry.
Well, the grandmother's jewelry has come back into vogue. But most people have no concept of how to pick something that's really nice or have any idea of the different varieties of pearls that are available to them today. Now, pearls run all the way from a strand that could be less than $10,
mm-hmm.
all the way up to strands that are several hundred thousand dollars.
Wow. Now, how do you determine price? Freshwater pearls are relatively inexpensive, correct?
Freshwater pearls are relatively inexpensive because the Chinese literally destroyed their own market by producing a product with very thin nacre on them. And nacre is the same composition as enamel on your teeth.
So when they talk about your pearly whites...
They're talking about pearls. Well, could be, but that's the similarity of it.
Yeah.
And they used to be in the Arabic nations. They used to match the pearls' colors to a child's teeth.
Oh my goodness.
Yeah.
And then the other thing that makes a difference in pearls, for example, well, these are like the freshwater pearls, right? The little
pearls
there.
Those are the rice pearls. Yes.
Okay. And what does rice pearl mean? It's just kind of the
shape.
It
looks like a grain of rice.
Yes. And those were popular several years ago, they were real popular.
Like 1960s was the high point of
them. Was it the high point? Okay.
Yeah.
I knew it was a while back. So this strand right here, somebody had strung with gold in between it, really dressed it up and gave it a different look.
Well, they still have a very fine place for it in fashion.
Mm-hmm.
They're not expensive anymore. I mean, even a high-cost designer, the pearls themselves usually run less than $500,
yeah,
even for a high-profile designer.
Right.
Now, at the other end of the spectrum, you have a sale and you have the traditional Mikimoto, which is the gold standard of cultured pearls.
These are beautiful. And, you know, one of the ways I believe you tell pearls, tell the quality, is by putting them in your hand and being able to see how closely they are all matched up and similar.
That is a big dollar value for the for a necklace, is that it has to be matched for color, luster, and also shape.
Yeah. And is there a size that is the most desired size, or how do you determine that as far as that goes?
Well, let's put it this way. A strand of pearls, let's say, sold for $100, so that was 4 millimeter.
Okay. Pretty small.
If you doubled it to 8 millimeter instead of it being going to $200,
mm-hmm,
it would go to something like $1,800.
Wow.
Yeah.
Wow.
It's a direct function of the size and luster of the pearls. And the bigger they are, the fewer ones that are uniform in size and uniform in shape and color.
Yeah. Well, those are beautiful, and those actually were by Mikimoto.
These are Mikimoto's.
So that makes them particularly, I guess we should say, rare as far
as
pearls.
Well, it makes it rare, but it also stops any conversation on the quality of them.
Because all he did was great
quality.
All
he did was AB or AAA pearls and 4A when you consider the shape and the texture.
Wow. Okay.
This is a interesting thing. Mikimoto wanted to be able to control his quality, so he came up with his own standard of being able to measure the grade of pearls.
Okay.
And it's a very simple grading system. You match it to an existing standard.
And then there's supposed to be no question.
Supposed to be no question.
Well, of course, that's not true today so much, but there is supposed to be no question. So that's a standardized chart, and that is very helpful when you're trying to grade pearls.
Very helpful when you're grading them, very helpful when you're pricing them, and very helpful when you're buying them.
Absolutely. Now, today people are wearing like multiple strands, right? Isn't that the big deal?
That's
the
big deal for fashion this fall, and that looks like it's going to carry over to next spring.
So you can wear a short strand, a medium strand, a longer strand. You can double them up, triple them up if you've got a really long strand. So there is just multiple of pearls. I think the other great thing about pearls is if you don't know what to wear, they always say wear pearls.
Well, the other thing is that most people have some strands of pearls that within their jewelry box, because even if they haven't worn them or mom hadn't worn them, grandma had them, and they were handed down. And long as they were taken care of, they're just as fine today as they were 50 years ago, 60 years ago, 80 years ago.
And they used to be the traditional wedding gift.
Traditional wedding gift, and was traditional for confirmation. Was a big deal for graduation from high school. That was one of the things that was a gift of de rigueur, that somebody was going to give that girl a strand of pearls.
That's right. Now, I wanted to talk about this strand of pearls here. By the way, in the after show today, we are going to tell you how to take care of your pearls. So you got to tune us in on Facebook. That's going to be a Facebook Live on the after show. So you got to tune in for that. But what is the deal with all these different color pearls, Jeff?
All right, these pearls right here are South Sea pearls. They came from the area of Tahiti, and they came from Broome, Australia. And you have the different colors. When the colors are actually determined by the mineral content and also the temperature of the water that the mollusk is in.
So it's the temperature and the, actually, isn't it the like the pollution?
Right.
The pollution in the water
That's absolutely correct. Yeah. I mean, and around Tahiti, the pollution was created by a large reef that they had, and the reef puts spores into the water, and the clams feed off the spores.
How about that, folks? Yeah. This is the type of thing that just, you don't get this kind of information on a home shopping network. If you want to find out about these type of things, you got to come see us right here at Sharp Facets Gallery. Aren't these beautiful? And again, if you notice the luster and the subtlety of the color, they are just fantastic. This strand happens to be mine, folks. Just in case anybody's wondering, I have donated them today. A very dear friend specifically matched each and every one of these stones as a gift to me several years ago. And no, it wasn't Jeff.
Oh, my God. That is correct, Ann.
That is right. I know it is. So,
let's go on to a different...
Let's change the subject and move on, Ann. Okay.
Let's go on to a different type of pearl, the so-called Mabé pearl.
Mabé. Here is a big Mabé.
Actually, that is a very big Mabé.
And a very, very nice quality one, I might add.
Very high quality.
Yes.
But the great majority, nobody knows how they're going to turn out until they harvest the mollusk.
Mm-hmm.
Now, a pearl, they can harvest a pearl right out of the pearl mollusk
mm-hmm.
without killing it.
Right.
This is implanted right into the lining of
the shell,
and it produces a design that they have no control over.
And they actually cut it away from the shell.
They cut it away from the shell.
Now, when they do that, do they ruin the mollusk?
Oh, absolutely.
Is he dead after that? He gives his life for this?
That'd be like skinning you.
I was afraid that's what you were going to tell us. Yes, okay.
All right. We like them because they create an artistic picture unto themselves. For instance, this we're going to do up as a mother and daughter thing.
Oh, that's pretty.
Yeah, it's very pretty. I mean, they don't limit your imagination.
That's true. That's true. They're beautiful. Here are some ones that she's taking pictures of right now that have been shaped. Actually, these are ready to go into rings or pendants. Just a simple bezel. It doesn't really need a lot. This one right here, it actually looks, and they call this the fried egg, don't they, Jeff?
In the trade, they call it the fried egg, yes.
Because it looks like a lump in the center and then the white around the outside of it.
This is another one that we don't hit for the mother and daughter type thing.
Oh, they're beautiful. They're beautiful, and the luster is fantastic. If you've never seen these, you need to come by and see us here at Sharp Facets Gallery. This week, we're going to have some of these items on display so that you'll be able to come in and see them at, what shall we say, au naturel, not mounted, so you'll have the opportunity to see them in the buff here. So come by and see us. We're not open this afternoon. This one right here, Emerald, is one that we had made up right here that goes on a strand of pearls, has a pearl enhancer bail, and that's really beautiful. So we're taking little videos. We'll be posting these on Facebook for you to see it, but that's like a double Mabé pearl right there. Mabé's really
called twins.
Twins.
Very seldom ever get them that match up enough to use them as twins.
That's right. So if you're looking for unique and different things, particularly with the holidays just 11 weeks away, you got to come see us here at Sharp Facets Gallery. Now, real quick, Jeff, and then we're going to take a break and come back and talk about, you want to take those out, the black pearls right there? Tell us a little bit more about those. We got the black pearls, like, come out of Tahiti, basically.
Basically, almost all the blacks come out of Tahiti.
And again, it is because of the pollution in the water.
It's actually the makeup that the color is derived by the large reef that's around Tahiti that puts off the pollution, yes.
So it's natural pollution.
It's natural pollution. It's spores, it's larvae,
it's not man-made pollution.
not man-made.
Okay, that was one thing I was never sure of on that.
Man-made pollution essentially kills the mollusk and ruins the pearls.
Wow. I didn't know. Yeah, okay. All right. Well, we are here talking about pearls this afternoon. You know, pearls are June's birthstone, and they also are one, I don't remember which anniversary they are, but pearls are a great gift. Whether you do a simple pair of pearl earrings, whether you do a strand of pearls or design a ring, there are wonderful things you can do with pearls. We have lots of pearls right here at Sharp Facets Gallery. Hey, right now we're going to hear a word from our sponsors. When we come back, we're going to be talking about cameos, another one of those historic items. They're like little miniature works of art. So you keep it right here on WCRS. We'll be right back. Don't you go away.
McDonald's presents Confessions of an Ex-Hipster.
I loved cappuccinos, so I put on an itchy turtleneck and grew a goatee. But before I knew it, I was into French films, indie rock, and not bathing. Luckily, I got help from McDonald's McCafe cappuccinos. Now I'm watching football, wearing khakis, even high-fiving again. Thank you, McDonald's.
New McCafe mochas, lattes, and cappuccinos from McDonald's. With fresh ground espresso and real steamed milk, it's all the coffee, hold the attitude. At participating McDonald's.
Visit your local McDonald's in Greenwood and Abbeville today.
Oh, that's right. We're back with the Vintager this afternoon. We've been talking about pearls. We've been talking about opals. We're going to do a little after show live on Facebook that we hope you'll tune into with us right here on WCRS.AM radio on Facebook. But now we're going to talk a little bit about cameos. We have some gorgeous cameos. Those really are little works of art, aren't they, Jeff?
They were one of the most famous and tireless works of art that's ever, timeless works of art that ever come about.
So what would you like to talk about?
Well, the fact is that even the ancient Egyptians in the mummies' tombs found cameos.
Okay, and carved out of shell like what we see today?
Pretty much just like what you see today. I mean, there was some carved out of elephant ivory, of course, but the great majority were carved out of shells, very much like you see today. The Romans got the desire for cameos from the Greeks, who got the desire for cameos from the Minoans, who got the desire for cameos from the Egyptians.
Wow.
Yeah.
Well, and, you know, we always think of cameos as being portraits, but it's like this one, with the three gals here.
Well, the three muses were a popular theme for cameos. Also for cameos was Rachel at the Well, Pompeii, the grandeur of Rome. I mean, there were quite a few topics for cameos. The ones that you primarily see, though, of course, are the ladies. And there's three types of ladies' cameos. One is the mythological characters that they would have, the Athena or even Medusa was duplicated on cameos. But the other...
Wait a minute. Medusa?
Give me a break. People like ugly.
Medusa? Okay.
Okay.
All right.
I forgot where I was at.
The mythological and Medusa, that's what you were saying, and I happened to interrupt you.
Well, that was the characters that they would use. And the Romans actually took cameo carving to a next level and to the desirability level. And they had the mythological characters. They had the religious themes. And then they had the ladies, and they had Ursault's lady that would be encompassed to every woman. And usually you can determine the age of the cameo by the hairstyles. But they also had the capability to take, once photography came in vogue, they could take a daguerreotype or a photograph and make it from that and produce the cameo that would match you. That would be a miniature bas relief of your picture.
Now, those always had to be side views, though, correct?
most of them were side views, but if you sat in front of them, it was a full-on facial view, like we have some illustrations here.
Correct. But that's what I'm saying. If it was a front view, it almost had to be one where they were sitting there, as opposed to most that we see that are side views that were taken from a daguerreotype picture because it was black and white and you couldn't see all the detail
right
when you did it face on, like what we can do today.
Well, the face on ones started becoming popular in the 1850s.
Mm-hmm.
And were totally overwhelmed the market by the early 1900s.
Mm-hmm.
When people started doing cook's tours of Europe.
Right. And graduation tours. Didn't they do graduation?
The graduation tours. The money people would sit there in front of somebody, have their cameo done, pick it up in a day or two when they came back through Naples. And all the tours went through Naples. They went to see Vesuvius. They went to see Pompeii. And they went to have their cameos done.
Is that where someone had a cameo role came from?
Oh, my God. It could have been, Ann. But I think that came out of the movies when they used to use that little shape.
Like a cameo.
Right, okay. Like a cameo.
Okay,
it
right.
Framed a person's face.
Yeah.
We have cameos here that date back to the 1700s.
Wow.
The other thing of cameos that we have is we have the traditional conch shell cameo, and a conch shell is calcium carbonate, which essentially is lime.
Mm-hmm.
So you have to treat cameos quite nicely. We'll go over that later, but
right.
You had the calcium carbonate, which was your normal cameo shell,
mm-hmm.
and it came from the Bay of Naples. And it had very distinctive layers, made it a lot easier to carve. Now, one of the things that you can tell a natural cameo from a fake one is just hold it up to the light.
And what happens when you hold it up to the light?
You see through it.
The other thing is most cameos, or real cameos, are signed. Somewhere on the back there, you'll find a small signature.
A lot of people never realized they were signed, but on the back of their initials are actually a signature sometimes.
Exactly.
And people say, well, why would they have done that? Well, why does any artist sign his work?
Exactly. And the other thing is they have so many apprentices that have to spend time carving cameo after cameo until they can actually be considered a master cameo maker.
What
carver.
We have here is a cameo on the conch shell without it having it cut out. Now, the reason it's there is that these were given out to the apprentice. A picture would be put up on the wall, and they had a small amount of time
to carve it.
To carve it. And to go on to the next step to be a master carver or whatever. They had to be able to pass certain time and beauty limitations.
Wow. Now, one of the other things about cameos, if I remember correctly from the history, is that the cameo was the traditional gift that was given a mother-daughter gift when the daughter was going off to get married.
Yes, and surprisingly enough, that's more of a Scandinavian tradition than it is of a Southern Italy tradition where you would think because they did so many cameos that would be ingrained there, but it was the Baltic countries that produced that most of the people that did the cameo thing, but it was like a constant remembrance of mom.
Yeah, because in those days you might move away from home and you might never see your mom again.
It was an interesting philosophy, wasn't it?
Yeah, something different from today.
Now all they have to do is look out the front door and here they come
mom,
again.
Hey, mom, there you go.
Let's move back with mom.
Exactly.
The other thing that happened, though, is from time to time, Vesuvius would erupt and they would kill all the conch. Well, until that...
They had conch killing.
Well, until that rebuilt its... a level of being able to harvest them, the cameo carvers had to fall back on other materials. And some of it was they carved lava. Some of it they carved mother of pearl, ivory. It's a lot of different materials they carved, and the Germans actually carved what they call hardstone cameos, which are basically agate. But the Italians, it took 7 years for the bay to usually re-nourish itself after an eruption of Vesuvius.
Wow. Well, when we come back, how about we date a few of these that have some of the pretty filigree, and maybe we talk a little bit about this ivory carving that actually came, didn't that come out of, where did it come out of, Alaska?
Alaska. Yeah.
And we've got a beautiful painting on ivory here. All of these pieces, the ivory pieces, are old, so they're beautiful, and we wanted to tell you a little bit about them. We also want to be able to tell you some of the age of these based on the frames and everything that they're in. So we're going to hear a quick word from our sponsor. We'll be back. Hey, don't forget, we're doing an after show live on Facebook. All you got to do is go to WCRS.AM radio and join us for the live after show right here on WCRS.
Layaway. We've done it for over 30 years here at Sharp Facets Gallery. So whether it's Christmas, a birthday, an anniversary, or just because, we know layaway every day. Come see us today at Sharp Facets Gallery. Need more info? Call us 229-6613. That's 229-6613.
Oh, that's right. We're coming back to you right here on WCRS. We've got phones ringing. We've got Jeff, the vintager, here with us this afternoon. And we are so excited to be able to talk about pearls, cameos, and we've talked about opals. Right after 5 o'clock, we are going to do a live after show. So you got to stay tuned, and we'll have a good time doing that. We're going to talk about how you take care of your pearls, how you take care of opals, how you take care of cameos, and so much more. So I hope you'll be able to join us, WCRS.AM radio, live Facebook after 5. So, Jeff, we've got a couple of minutes left here. We've got a gorgeous piece here that is made of ivory. What can you tell us about this piece?
This piece is actually from Alaska. The people were trained by the ones out of Naples. Some Italians went up to Fairbanks at the end of World War II. And they had mastodon ivory there, which is the ivory that was 14,000, 15,000 years old and older. And
no elephants were killed in the making of this ivory here.
No, not this ivory. Yeah. I mean, these elephants have been gone for a long time. But the ivory had a texture and a color that the Italians thought they would take back. But in between time, they taught the natives how to carve. They already had the ability to carve. They finished out their educational capabilities on what to do.
They make it finer? Make it maybe finer?
They made them much, much finer.
You are listening to WCRS right here in Greenwood. We're going to carry over here a little bit.
This particular piece that I have here was actually an award-winning piece.
It's beautiful.
Yeah, it won like best in the show in the late 60s, early 70s. I forgot what it was. We had one that was from 72 and we had one that was from 68.
Now, what's the background? I mean, it's darker on the back. If you're watching, when you see this video, you'll see what I'm talking about.
Well, it's the exact opposite of what you would think. The darker area is the outer layer of the tusk, and the lighter area is the interior, but ivory stains if it's been in the ground for 15,000 years.
Wow. Well, it is a smashing piece, and if you'd like to see more of our cameos, you just got to come by and see us here at Sharp Facets Gallery. Now, one of the other ones we want to talk about real quick, this is a beauty. For those of you that like filigree, like Jamie, we have a beautiful filigree cameo here. It's got the diamond around the neck. If you notice, the carving is just sensational, the flowers and whatnot. What can you tell us about this one, Jeff?
This particular caviar, we're talking about early 1900s. It actually was done from a picture.
Mm-hmm.
The accent part with the little diamond around the neck to give it the look was the convey the idea that the wearer had money.
Right.
We're talking about a time that if you had it, you flaunted it.
Oh, okay. Those were the good times.
Those were good times.
There you go.
This is the Belle Epoque period that we had, one of the finest periods in jewelry. They consider it the top of the design era, that from then on, everything that's happened since then had its roots there.
Wow.
From manufacturing technique to design. And the filigree around this one is particularly fine and nice.
It is. It's beautiful. And it's in white gold. And the other thing you should notice, a lot of cameos were pins, right? But they also were pendants because they had the flip up. They could flip up, or the bail, which is what you put on the chain, would actually flip up or fold down. So it could be worn either way. That's pretty nice, too.
And what's pretty unique on that is that that concept started in Europe in the late 1700s.
Another thing we learn from our vintager right here on WCRS. We house him right here at Sharp Facets Gallery. We keep him here. He's always available. If you'd like to come by and check out some of our cameos, or if you have a cameo that you'd like to know more about, stop on by and see us right here at Sharp Facets Gallery on the 72 bypass between South State Bank and Burger King. Hey, I'm Ann Eller. Jeff, another excellent job here this afternoon, Vintager Jeff.
Well, it was kind of fun.
Kind of fun? Okay. Well, I hope you'll be able to join us for the after show. Just a few minutes from now, we'll be going live on Facebook. So stay right here. Tune on your Facebook page. Check it out. If you don't, you'll be able to check out the videos a little later. She's uploading them as she's doing them. And we couldn't do it without Emerald here this afternoon doing all the great pictures and videos. Thanks so much, everybody. This is WCRS right here in Greenwood. We'll be live in just a moment. So join us on Facebook, WCRS.AM Radio.